Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I am Brian Hefty. Live in the Morton studio today, it's Farmer Friday. We would love to hear from you if you want to call in at any point during our show. Our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us radio@agphd.com or send me a note on Twitter, AgPhD Media, or Brian Hefty. Well, today, Darren is out, so I am joined by agronomist Rob Fritz. Rob, how are things going today?
Well, it's actually a really wonderful day. Nice weather here. I know weather's always the topic of conversation, but we got perfect growing weather as far as what you could ask for, just about.
All right. What are the main things that farmers are talking to you about right now?
Well, you know, most times this time of year, it's soybean aphids. That's the normal topic.
What are you seeing right now?
None. Very, very low numbers.
Yeah, but
what I can tell you is we have another problem that's popping up, and it's actually quite substantial. We have many reports now of huge infestations of aphids in the corn. Yeah. And I've gotten that from multiple people.
Yep.
And it's hard
corn
to
leaf aphids.
Yeah, and it's hard to know what to do because they're congregated around the ears. And we're talking millions. And
I don't think it's hard to know what to do. You spray.
Well,
so there has been some work done on this.
Right.
Now, granted, it's really old.
It's limited.
Yep. You go back to the 1970s is where we're talking. But you start running the numbers and you say, hey, if I have 400 or so up on the tassel is usually where they're talking, then, yeah, you absolutely could justify treatment. The other thing is a lot of people are still considering an application of fungicide. I mean, granted, we tasseled on our farm a month ago for a lot of our corn, but there are a lot of guys where, hey, it just tasseled here in the last week or two. You know what? You could throw a fungicide out at the same time. You could throw a little foliar fertilizer out besides the insecticide.
Well, and that is true. And I guess what I was saying is what's bothering me more is they're around the ears.
Yeah.
They're down in that, you know, the sink of the plant is the ear, and they're moving to where the goodies are right now. All the plant is pushing all that fertility into that ear to fill it. And that bothers me. You know, it's a Lors band treatment, which
bifenthrin.
Well, you can. I just worry about coverage and getting down into the canopy. Whereas if I got a Lors band, I'm not going to probably do much fertilizer work because it can burn.
That's what I was going to say.
But for the fungicide, I'd be all in on that.
Okay, so back 3 weeks ago, 2 and 3 weeks ago, I don't remember when it was exactly, but anyway, when we sprayed our corn, we threw bifenthrin in, and that was part of the reason why I threw that in, because there were a few corn leaf aphids out there then, and then you get residual for a couple of weeks. So I'm not too worried about our corn. Have you been out in any of our fields where we did treat with insecticide?
Yeah, I've been in quite a few fields, actually. That's one of my little late after work hobbies is I walk around in fields. But, you know, we look really good right now. I'm not seeing them.
Right.
Obviously, you lay that initial blanket of insecticide down and you knock out those early ones that are coming in and then they just don't multiply. In fact, one of my producers south of Sioux Falls area, so he'd be on the very southern part of the state here, he treated all but one half of one field and he says it is just infested. So he knew he hit them right and he was going back in to have it resprayed by a plane because it was infested.
And it's
kind of ironic, like this year we're not seeing the soybean aphids, but we're seeing the corn aphids, and there's no way to predict what you're going to have on a year-to-year basis.
All right, I got two things I'll tell you. First of all, when we look at the old research on corn leaf aphids, what they found is that when the plant is under stress, that's when the leaf aphids are worse, when they cause more damage. So in other words, the threshold is a lot lower. When the plant has everything else perfect, then the plant can tolerate more corn leaf aphids. So that's something you can think about. The other thing, when you mentioned that, we don't know what's going to happen. I occasionally will tell this story that back when I was in college and then right after college, I worked for FMC, who at the time was a big insecticide company. And they had a lot of great entomologists working for them, just fantastic. I appreciate the experience that I had because I learned so much from those people. Well, anyway, one of these old entomologists I asked him some question like, you know, what do you think the bug population is going to be this summer on some insect? I don't even remember what it was. And he goes, Brian, look, I'm way smarter than you'll ever be, and I can't predict bug populations, so don't think you ever will be able to. And I that's always stuck with me, that his whole point was simply this. We know we're going to have bugs out there of some sort, but you have to keep scouting all the time because we don't know which bug it is, what the what level they're going to be at, when they're going to show up. We just don't know.
Well, yeah. In fact, one guy today called me, wanted to know if he should spray, and he said he walked out of the field and he was covered in the, you know, the sap or whatever, and he said he was sticky from head to toe. And I said, I think you've reached that threshold. I mean, that means you got a lot, you know. And we're getting heavy dew, and it's dragging that down the plant, and then you're going to have diseases come in. So that's why the fungicides make sense. And and you know, we are sitting right here with what looks to be a fantastic crop. You know, so when you have all those things going and you have these pressures ramping up, I think it's well worth it. And the fungicidal program actually in the beans is driving a lot of things. You know, we're seeing the fungus problems. We're seeing the you know, different diseases come on in beans. So guys are actually responding more to that issue we have with disease than they are. We're not seeing the bug load. But if you're going to make a pass, there are enough bugs out there to justify it, in my estimation.
Yeah, so we would encourage you, get out there and scout your fields. Tremendously important. And believe me, I know it's not a whole lot of fun going out in 8-foot, 10-foot tall corn and walking all through that when it's 90 degrees out. But the point is, if you don't look, some of these things might be there. And if they are to a level that's economically damaging, then you could absolutely justify treatment.
Yeah, it's an easy way to, there's two ways to make money. You can not lose it or you can save it.
Yep.
And that's what you're doing. You're just preserving that yield potential.
All right. Well, once again, it is Farmer Friday. If you want to call in at any time during our show today, we'd love to have you. The number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. It's 844-442-4743. Or send me an email, radio@agphd.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with your phone calls after this.
Farmers, you put a lot of money into growing the best crops possible every year. So it only makes sense to make sure every bit of that ends up in your tank. Estes patented concaves stop rotor loss with less grain damage. Best of all, they work in all crops. No more changing concaves. Call 765-650-4131 or visit EstesPerformanceConcaves.com and get what you harvest. That's 765-650-4131.
No two seasons are the same, so you need your crops to rise ready for whatever's in store. Now, there's one simple decision that provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio offers protection against disease, insects, nematodes, and even moisture or nutrient stress. In the fight against the unpredictable, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/riseready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
You don't settle. You're driven. You're committed. You're a farmer. And you are relentless. Mycogen Seeds is relentless too. We won't stop. We never settle. We don't back down. We work hard and we work smart to get to know you and your farm and make sure you get the right seed on the right acres. See for yourself at Mycogen.com or talk to your local Mycogen Seeds dealer and let us prove our relentless dedication to you.
Farming in the dark? We've flipped the switch on. More insights, more options for more farmers. Introducing Smart Insight daily satellite imagery on farm weather stations, crop modeling, scouting, alerts available in more locations than ever before. Smart Insight, the only crop monitoring and digital agronomy solution with daily insights. Visit farmersedge.ca for details.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio on Farmer Friday. We're live in the Morton studio today taking your phone calls, 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's get to John up in Ontario, Canada. John, how are you today? Let's try that one more time.
Morning, so.
Oh, sorry, John. I didn't... I'm apparently having trouble running my computer today, so I got her figured out there. Sorry about that. So anyway, how are things going today?
Good, good. We finished up fungicide this morning on the corn and just cleaning up the sprayer.
Tell me about that. Do you normally do fungicide on corn?
We do all ours, plus I do about 5,000-6,000 acres of custom work, custom spraying. So we're right in a pocket here in Chatham, Ontario, where Western Bean is a real problem. So if they're going across with fungicide, we're putting on an insecticide with it. So the moth counts were fairly high, and the scouting with the egg masses were there, so it warrants spraying, but not at the beginning of the season 2 weeks ago, but now for sure.
Sure. So when did a lot of the corn tassel?
Well, we're still having a couple fields right now, but I'd say the majority within the last week.
Oh, okay.
10 days ago. So, yeah, we were some early. We got on the field end of April and then got held off till basically May 10th, and then we finished up May 30th on our corn. So.
Sure. So what are you doing for fungicide? Are you running multiple modes of action? Are you using one mode of action? What do you do there?
We're using anywhere from two BSF products by Praxor and Headline Amp, and then some fellows are using Corumba, too, which they're on a DuPont program with their herbicides, so for the rebates.
Yep. And so you're out there because of the Western bean cutworm. How many years has that been a big issue around your area?
The past five for sure. And there were a lot of helicopters flying, and now there's a lot of ground rigs going. So mostly, I would say 80% by ground rig and 20% by helicopters. So
how's the corn look overall?
Oh, really good right now. We were in a... Until about a week ago, we were fairly dry, but most farms received at least 2 inches of rain, if not more. So,
good.
Yeah, very good. Yeah. It wasn't looking good 2 weeks ago at all, no.
So just too dry at that point?
Yes, it was. Yeah. We're like an hour east of Detroit.
Sure.
So right along close to Lake Erie.
You bet. Yep. Yeah, I've been through that country before. Yeah, it's nice there. So how about other crops around there?
Tomato crop looks good. A lot of processing vegetables for a couple companies around here. They look good. They had some loss of end rot at the start, but otherwise they've come a long ways. The white beans looks good. Everything looks really good in this region. So to droughty sand to heavy clays, they all look fairly even. So
good.
I think we're good so far. And we're going to need another rain. And right now, as we speak, it's raining to the north of me, but not right here. So.
Yep. Do you have a lot of soybeans in your area?
Right where the home farm is, it's a heavier soil, so there's quite a bit of soybeans. But as I go more east, northeast of the home farm, there's a lot more corn on corn. Like some of my farms have been 24 years corn on corn. So,
really? Is your market just that good for corn or a lot of livestock guys, or what's the deal?
No, we have a greenfield an ethanol plant within half an hour trucking distance. So
got it.
And another one an hour, and then another one an hour, and then an Ingridion corn sugar plant, another hour. So quite a few plants right here on the 401 corridor. Yep.
Okay, so I live in the United States. I'm just curious, how do people in Canada, in your area, feel about ethanol and some of these biofuels?
Well, I think most guys are pretty happy with it. Maybe the livestock guys aren't, but I'm one of them, so we custom raise fair number of hogs here too, but it's all prepared feed, so we used to grind our own, but it seems to be like whatever the ethanol plant's paying, that's the farmers that are buying corn for their hog operations are paying about the same.
Yeah,
that's what the bid is delivered. So
yep.
But not, there's a lot of livestock guys that moved out of this area, so it's more of a cash crop area now.
Sure, you bet.
So yeah.
All right, well, hey John, thanks a lot for calling. Glad the spraying has turned out good, and hope you continue to get some rain here and you have a great crop.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
You bet, thank you. All right, next we've got John down in Kansas. Hey John, how are things going down there?
Hi, how are you doing today?
we're doing great. We're just hoping for about one more rain here to kind of finish our soybeans out, and otherwise we're getting toward the end.
Well, send some down to me, please.
You know, every year we talk to farmers all over the country, and where we're at in the country, we don't get a lot of rain, but we're much cooler than you are, obviously, in Kansas, so we don't need as much rain either. And that's one of the things we talk about all the time, is one area is getting too much, there's another area that needs it. I'd love to send a bunch of rain or a bunch of moisture down to you every spring when we're struggling to get the crop in the ground. Unfortunately, though, I usually need it back in July. That's general. About now is when we're starting to run really short. But anyway, so it's pretty dry right around you?
Oh, real dry. We haven't had rain in my area. It's weird. Like, if you go 10 miles, maybe 20 miles west of Topeka, I live just south of Topeka, in a little town called Wakarusa, Kansas. Mm-hmm. But if you go 10 miles west of here, they get like a week and a half ago, they got like an inch and a half of rain. We got nothing. The rain like splitting right around us. It went north and south of us. And most of the guys around here, their fields, the corn is gone. There's nothing left. They're starting to chop it and stuff because it's done for already. Soybeans are starting to feel the pinch. But now we waited until like the end of May, the first part of June to plant our soybeans. So we're doing all right as far as our beans looking.
Sure.
But a lot of people, if they don't have irrigation, their beans are already turning yellow and dying, and there ain't even a bean pod on their beans yet.
Wow, that's too bad. So do you have much irrigation on your farm?
No, we have none. I was listening to yesterday's show. And I was going to call, but I didn't want to confuse you guys because I had gotten a message to talk to you guys for today. So I didn't want to call yesterday because I'm interested in trying to figure out how to do an irrigation kind of thing. But I know it's expensive, but I don't know. I'm at a loss. That's why I drive a truck to make up the extra cash flow to keep the farm running.
Sure. Well, yeah, with that whole irrigation thing, you know, it just depends on where you're at and what your soil type is and everything else as to how that's going to pay. But we have all these really high yield farmers that we work with all the time, and they just kind of laugh at us that, how do you not have irrigation on the farm? It pays so unbelievably well. I go, well, number one, we sit right over a whole bunch of granite. I can't get to a good supply of water. So I got a major problem with that. But we're also much cooler than, you know, well, like you there, or if for all these people that are in the southern United States, we're just so much cooler. We don't have all that evaporation loss either. But yeah, I mean, there are a couple different ways that most people are now going. And certainly you can do flood irrigation and those types of things. But, you know, it's either center pivot, which is a lot less expensive up front, or you've got that drip tape where you're going to use a lot less water. And maybe in the long run, it pans out. It just depends on your situation. But either way, guys are not only putting water on, they're putting nutrients on. So then they can really control what's happening out on their ground. So, yeah, it's certainly something you should be looking at.
Right. Now, sorry about that. I was listening to yesterday's show. I was really curious because you guys hit a topic that I have a big problem with. Is that late mold every year? I'm not saying my whole field, but we do about 1,000 acres.
Yep.
And I'd say maybe, I don't know, maybe 300 acres, not quite, give or take, but it's spotty. But there's like spots on big time where you'll see like, oh, maybe 20 feet in front of you is just the whole width of the row, like say 20 foot wide ahead, 20 feet long, is all white mold. How can a person, what is that? Is that like a calcium deficiency, or would that be, what causes a late mold to grow?
Okay, well, you have to have the right conditions, and that's why I'm kind of surprised you even have that, because we don't generally see that much as we go south because you're too hot. It's going to start with mushrooms in the soil. They're going to shoot spores out. They're going to go into where flowers have been or are, and then infect that plant. We found there's a link between that and manganese. So if you have better manganese levels, you usually have less white mold. We'll maybe talk a little more about that after this break. Stay tuned. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
Grow corn that pays you back for your investment. Headline Amp Fungicide from BASF is the smart choice. It consistently delivers plant health and disease control benefits like increased stress tolerance. You get more yield from an at-tassel application than any other fungicide, with best-in-class preventative and post-infection disease control. Grow smart with BASF and Headline Amp. Talk to your retailer today. BASF, we create chemistry. Always read and follow label directions.
Farming in the dark? We've flipped the switch on. More insights, more options for more farmers. Introducing Smart Insight daily satellite imagery, on-farm weather stations, crop modeling, scouting, alerts, available in more locations than ever before. Smart Insight, the only crop monitoring and digital agronomy solution with daily insights. Visit farmersedge.ca for details.
They don't leave nicely. When worms and aphids attack your crop, fight back with Nudrin. Nudrin is a powerful insecticide that's applied after your crop has emerged. Its quick knockdown and almost immediate control stops worms and aphids in their tracks. Learn more about Nudrin and how to protect your crops from in-season invasions. Visit us at rotamnorthamerica.com. That's rotamnorthamerica.com.
One thing growers need to succeed is freedom to choose what they put in their fields. That's why FMC Freedom Pass agronomic rewards make it easy and economical to pair your favorite seed brand with products proven to protect crops throughout the season. Choosing Authority brand herbicides and other proven FMC products pays more than ever before. Calculate your potential incentive at fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass today. Always read and follow label directions. Authority brand herbicides are not registered for sale or use in California.
White mold on soybeans is a costly problem. Andiamo fungicide from SipCam Agro is a powerful and affordable solution. Here's why. Andiamo moves rapidly throughout the plant, providing fast and lasting control. And Andiamo features a low use rate, broad disease spectrum, and a better return on investment than other fungicides. For best performance on white mold, apply Andiamo at first bloom. Learn more about Andiamo fungicide by visiting SipCamAgro.com or calling 877-898-9514.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
Right before the break, we were talking with John down in Kansas. He said he had a white mold issue. And, you know, John, here is what I will typically do. If I've got white mold just in a couple of fields and it continues to be a problem every time I raise soybeans, we'll just go plant corn 2 or 3 years in a row. When we break that rotation, that dramatically reduces the amount of white mold that we see then in future years. There's certainly a number of products you can use if you want to do a little Cobra before flowering, if you want to do like Endura is the most expensive and best product at first flower, that usually works pretty good. There are other fungicides like Topsin and Domark that aren't too bad. And then there is Contans. It's expensive, but it's a biological that literally eats the sclerotia. So that's a way to prevent future outbreaks. It's not going to help you this year, but I mean, you know, once you're in season. But later, yes, that's a real good way to go. So either after your soybean crop and you see, hey, I had white mold in these spots, you could set up a variable rate map and you could turn your spray, have your sprayer automatically turn on and off. So you put Contans out where you need it, because you really don't want to spend money on every single acre. But I mean, I'm just trying to say there are plenty of options here to manage that white mold deal. But again, when we see warm temperatures, or I should say hot temperatures, especially above 90 degrees, white mold is rarely a big issue. So it's generally speaking much more of a problem for those of us in the north, like in the Dakotas, Minnesota, Michigan, or some of the states where we see the most white mold. All right, let's go out to the state of Illinois. We've got Keith on with us. Hey, Keith, I hear you have a question on tissue testing.
I do, Brian. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing all right. My question was, I heard you guys, I think you guys were talking about late season tissue testing and some soybeans the other day.
Yep.
And I've been doing that in a couple spots all year long. And this past Monday, my beans were at R5. And I really kind of had in mind that I thought that would probably be my last test.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't know if you guys were going a little bit later or think I ought to go later. Or
I usually tell guys to go until those beans start to senesce. Once you start seeing that the plant is cannibalizing itself, it's starting to yellow up just from maturity, then you're done. There's no point in testing anymore with the leaves. So I might go, like around here, we usually see that senescence happen in early September. So we usually will tissue test all the way till about the end of August on our soybeans.
Okay. Okay.
And more than anything too, I'll just tell you, there are no perfect guidelines for, hey, if your level is X, you need to apply this many pounds of potassium. Nobody has that exact formula. And also, just think about it logically when they say, okay, you're in the average range or you're in the high range, whatever. Okay, well, does that mean I could raise 100 bushel beans? Does that mean I could raise 80 bushel beans? Does that mean I have enough for 60 bushel beans? We don't have any of that stuff. So that's one of the things when you start talking to some of the really high yield guys, like Randy Dowdy, David Hewlett, some of these guys, they've been working on this for years and compiling as much data as they can on their own farms. And now they've got a lot of other people starting to do that too. So hopefully eventually in agriculture, we figure those things out. So when you call up with a question like this, you can say, hey, I'm at R5. Here's my level on K. And I can say, okay, well, if your yield goal is this, maybe you should apply this much potassium.
Right. Okay. I think that's good information. I remember you guys talking about this, this particular issue in the past about, late season, how much potassium these soybeans really need in a short term.
Yep.
And I just didn't know how accurate some of these recommendations were from some of these labs about, how many samples are they actually getting in to know what the average should be at R6.
Yep, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And so, unfortunately, it's just everybody is still in the learning process with all that, and it's a little bit of trial and error. I can also tell you, we don't always know what's causing the problem. Here's what I mean. You might have plenty of potassium in your soil, but you might have a bug or a disease or compaction or lack of moisture, or for some other reason, the potassium simply not getting into the plant. So is it really the fault of, hey, I didn't apply the fertilizer, or is it something else going on? So not to throw any more complexity into this thing, but I'm just trying to say it's not super easy. But I can tell you, like with potassium, yes, the soybean plant we know needs a crazy amount on a per day basis at that kind of R3 to R5, R6 stage. It's huge. It's a really big deal for not just yield, but also when we start talking about grain quality, seed size. I mean, there are a lot of things that go into that. So like for Darren and me, and really going all the way back to our dad, he used to raise a lot of seed beans. We do the same thing. Most of our soybean acres are for seed. Well, what does a seed company want? They want nice big beans that are healthy with lots of vigor. And it's amazing. Since we started doing a much better job with potassium on our farm, our seed size is unbelievable. We used to have an average seed size on our farm for soybeans of 3,000 to 3,500. Now our average seed size on our farm is 2,000, maybe 2,200 tops. So it's just changed so much, and the yields have done the same thing. In the last 15 years on our farm, we've gone from upper 30s to now we're around 70, and I really think we can get to 100 yet. But yeah, potassium is a big deal. The other thing for me, I'm in a drier area of the country than you when you're in Illinois, and so if I don't have a lot of rain, and that's how potassium gets into that plant, is with moisture. I almost have to have more potassium than you probably do, just because I am kind of short on moisture.
Sure. Well, I appreciate the time, Brian, and good information.
All right. Thanks, Keith. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. All right. Let's go out to West Virginia. We've got Mike on with us. Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm real good. How about yourself?
Doing great. So I hear you got a question on soybean maturities.
Well, yes, I was actually scouting. We've got some frog eye in the area,
okay.
And I was you know, just kind of checking. I'm going to spray a little bit. I don't seem to have too much problem. But my question is, I was just over on one farm, which I planted a few days before the one I'm on right now, and those were 3/8 and 3/9 beans. I'm still seeing a little bit of bloom coming to top. We've had a good bit of moisture, and you got some new growth up there. And you know, you don't have to look very far to see bloom.
Okay.
The farm I'm on right now, I was just walking in some group fours, 4-0s, and you have to look to find a bloom anywhere. And this was planted probably 2 or 3 days later. I guess what I'm asking, because I kind of was under the impression with a group four, a little bit longer, you've got a little bit more chance of growth if you do get, you know, a later rain or something like that for it to catch up.
Yep.
But that's not showing. Am I incorrect or?
Okay. First of all, you mentioned you had moisture with those 3/8, 3/9 beans lately. How about with the group fours and this other field? You've had similar moisture on both fields?
I mean, they've been spotty, but we have not lacked for moisture. If anything,
Got
we've
it.
Probably had excess on both.
Okay. The first thing that I will say, because we do an awful lot of work with soybean breeders, Darren especially, and just analyzing all these new lines that are coming out from different companies and everything, and it is a little bit shocking to both Darren and me how much the companies and the breeders are slightly off on their maturities. We're talking corn, soybeans, everything. Part of the deal now is these varieties are coming so fast, and it just depends on the area of the country you're in, the moisture they get, a number of different factors. But the point is that 3/8 or 3/9 bean actually could be a 4/0, and your 4/0 bean actually could be a 3/8 or 3/9. It's very close. You know, the company, we're kind of splitting hairs here. It's really close. So whenever I start talking about, okay, let's say it's a 3/8 versus a 4.0, it's almost identical. And then the next factor that we have to look at here is what else is going on in those fields. Just like we were talking about a minute ago, I'm going to look at soil fertility. I'm going to look at compaction, drainage. I mean, all these other factors. So it's very possible your group 4.0 could have premature death because we're short on something else, or there's a disease, or there's something else going on there, and we need to make that overall crop healthier. So my first guess is the company is just off on maturity. Second guess is it's some kind of stress.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it was kind of opposite of what I thought.
Yep, I know. We've had the same thing happen. Hey, Mike, thanks for calling. Really appreciate it. Best of luck to you the rest of the growing season here. Well, stay tuned. This is Ag PhD Radio.
With DuPont Approach Prima Fungicide, there's a difference. A real difference you can actually see in the health of your crops and the health of your bottom line. From superior coverage to more reliable performance, Approach Prima delivers long-lasting results against hard-to-control diseases like frog eye leaf spot, while the preventive and curative action gives you the application flexibility you need for greater yield potential. So see the difference of Approach Prima for yourself. Visit approachprima.dupont.com to learn more. Always read and follow label directions.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free GrainBridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at grainphd.com.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Farmers value their independence. So does FMC. We understand the freedom to choose the best products for your fields is key to your operation's success. With the exclusive agronomic and economic incentives of the new FMC Freedom Pass program, you're free to choose your favorite seed and protect your crops all season long with proven FMC products. To learn more, visit fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass.
or contact your authorized retailer today. Always read and follow label directions.
Zero. Zilch. Zip. That's the total cases of resistance documented with Manzate ProStick. That's right. Zero. Zilch. Zip. Not all fungicides can say this, but Manzate ProStick from UPI can. This multi-site fungicide not only controls walnut blight, it plays a critical role in delaying the development of resistance, which is why Manzate ProStick is the foundation fungicide in all walnut blight control programs. For a recommendation, contact your PCA. Always read and follow label directions.
Every season, you try to raise the bar to achieve your best corn yield ever, but disease can stand in the way. Like gray leaf spot, northern corn leaf blight, anthracnose leaf blight, and southern rust. New Dilaro fungicide can stop them. Two different modes of action work on the diseases for the entire spray interval, delivering best-in-class dual mode of action residual efficacy for extended performance. It's the help you need for personal best yields. Keep raising the bar with Dilaro from Bayer. Always read and follow label instructions.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here live in the Morton studio. It's Farmer Friday. If you want to call in today, 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's get back to the phone lines. We've got Mitch on with us from Colorado. Hey, Mitch, how's it going today?
Hey, how you doing, Brian?
We're doing great. So what's crop look like out there?
Oh, well, we about probably a week ago had some decent looking corn. Probably, I'd say, even 90% good to excellent. It was really good stand out there.
Yep.
But last week we got a pretty good sized hailstorm and turned a lot of it into broomstick.
That's frustrating. So
yeah, it sure is.
So is it a complete loss with everything, or are the ears still there, or what's it look like?
On a lot of my stuff, I kind of got lucky and still got ears there.
Oh, yep.
But there's definitely a lot of neighbors that have broomsticks.
Yeah.
So.
Yep, that's too bad. I mean, it's happened to just about every farmer out there at one point or another. We hope it never happens again, but, you know, I guess it's just unfortunately part of farming. So do you have any plans for those fields now other than to just let them go? Are you thinking fungicide? I mean, is there anything else you're going to do, or just kind of see how it turns out now this fall?
Yeah, I had one field that, you know, didn't get hit so bad that I decided that I wanted to throw a fungicide application on it, and went with a decent rate of propiconazole, just kind of something cheap to see how it works.
Yep.
And then did half of another field and just kind of go from there and see how the yield map looks.
Yeah. So we've done that before on our own farm, and I can just tell you, it's hit or miss. Sometimes you get some yield gain, sometimes you don't. The thing that I have liked, though, even if we didn't get yield gain, is at least the corn stood better, and it didn't look so like it had all kinds of disease all over it. So I sure thought we were going to have more yield every time, but we haven't. So you'll just have to see. I would kind of pay attention to how easy does it harvest and everything else. And I know if we would have gone a little later, we went out and got it early because I was worried about it falling down. But if we would have waited a little later, you know, it's very possible we might have had some more loss where we didn't put the fungicide on. Because, yeah, I mean, those stalks got a lot. They just were a lot healthier where you'd put that fungicide on.
Yep, and that was kind of the idea, is to kind of keep it alive. We're still probably about a month and a half at least before even thinking about putting a cornet on the combine. So,
yeah. Yep, yep.
You know?
Yep, same thing for us. It'll be at least mid to late September. I would guess probably late September, but we'll see how things go. So prior to that, you said the corn was looking really good. Was there anything in particular that happened this year to make it look so good? Any different management practices you used, or was it just great weather?
I would probably chalk up most of it to great weather. This is one of the first times in a long time that I've ran some dry land corn, and that's what mainly got hailed. I run usually a lot of irrigated corn.
Yep.
So, but,
All right. Well, hey, Mitch, thanks a lot for calling in today. Appreciate it. Sorry to hear about the hail, but hope things still turn out pretty good there for you.
All right. Sounds great. Have a good one, Brian.
Yep, you too. Let's go next to Kevin out in Illinois. Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Brian, how are you today?
We're great. So
I like the show.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it. So I hear you wanted to talk about tissue sampling a little bit.
Yeah, your previous caller brought up some questions I have on it.
Okay.
I'm in a position where I'm trying to do the high yield environment.
Yep.
I have the ability to manage water and so forth. But
okay.
Here in Western Illinois, we suffered the same problem they did in Northeast Missouri. We went week after week after week without rain, and we were getting into trouble until here recently. But my question is, about the third week of July, I was about a week prior to tassel.
Okay.
And I began to see what I thought was symptoms of low potassium uptake in the corn. So
yep.
I started pulling tissue the lab, and they came back, and these tissue samples all came back that everything was in an excellent range. And that's why I'm questioning, you know, just how accurate these tissue samples are.
So earlier in the show today, I'm going to put you on hold here for just a second. Just stay with me there, Kevin. Earlier in the show, we had Rob Fritz on. An agronomist, often helps co-host the show here and everything. He's been with us and together with Darren and me for about 20 years now. But anyway, that was one of the things Rob and I were just having a discussion about in terms of which leaf really should get pulled. And maybe it should be, prior to tassel, a combination of a number of different leaves and things like that. So there's still a lot of unanswered questions out there about tissue sampling. But one thing that is not unanswered is what does the potassium deficiency look like on a corn leaf. So let's talk about that for just a second, because this is what I assume you saw. On the lower leaves of the plant, you saw yellowing on the outside of the leaves. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, you're correct. It started
yep.
out as yellowing on the outside of the leaves and started turning brown as it migrated into the leaf.
Right. Yep, exactly. I used to see that exact same thing on our farm years ago, and I still can find a plant here or there, but this goes back 15, 20 years ago on our farm, because here in South Dakota, everybody was saying, including the university, oh, we have all kinds of potassium in the soil. You don't need to apply potassium. And then I'm going, okay, I'm not that smart a guy, but it sure looks, doesn't this look like potassium deficiency? And people are going, yeah, that sure does. So we started putting potassium on, and that problem went away, and our yield started going up, and our grain quality got better, and all kinds of things improved. So, you know, part of it, to your point here, you said you were really dry for a period of time. You have to remember, with potassium, it gets into the plant with moisture, with soil moisture. And if you are short on moisture, that means it's going to be harder for that K to get into the soil. And that was kind of my comment a little earlier when we were talking, just that, hey, versus Illinois, I'm in a lot drier area of the country. I probably get half the rainfall. So I kind of look at it as I have to have even more concentrated or higher levels of potassium in the soil in order to get that into the plant on a regular basis, because I have so little moisture. And anyway, we know it's a big deal having potassium out there, and we have to feed that plant with high levels of K. Corn, yes, it's important. With soybeans, it's even more important for yield. With corn, the bigger factor a lot of times is lodging, standability, just the thickness of that stalk and everything. So here's my question for you. Let's forget about tissue samples for just 1 second. Let's talk about your soil tests. Do you have any idea what your soil tests, like base saturation K levels, would happen to be?
Oh, yeah. And what I've done here is through the, we've done grid sampling on this place now for 20-some years.
Okay.
And we're fertilizing basically like for the P and K for 275 bushel yields, then come back and add another 100 units of mez, another 100 units of potash on a broad spread, you know,
yep.
as a second spread. So,
yep.
And then at the same time, we're getting our sulfur on and so forth, too. You know, we're using with that mez 10 units and then using sulfur nitrate at that time. And then
yep.
And then I'm also through the season, you know, applying nitrogen and APS through the pivots.
Yep.
But what really floored me was I knew I had this potassium issue.
Yep.
Theory was because I couldn't get enough water on even through irrigation, but yet the tissue samples came back showing everything was in an excellent range.
Yeah. So. Here's one little test you can do, and there are some farmers out there who do the same thing with soils. They'll take the tissue and they'll split it up into three, and they'll send it to three different labs and see if the labs all come up with the same thing. And like I say, some guys will do that on soil too. But yeah, I'd really look at what are your, even though and it sounds like you got a tremendous fertility program, but I'd still like to know what your base saturation K levels are. So I'm not talking parts per million. I'm talking what's your base saturation K. If you're not at least 4%, that's probably where we got a problem. And for a lot of guys that are like you, where you're going for, I mean, that's pretty high yield. When you start talking 275 bushel corn, a lot of times then we're in the 6 to 8% base saturation K range. So my guess, I'm just taking a guess here. I'm going to guess you're below 4% base saturation K, and maybe a little bit more would help alleviate that problem going forward.
Okay, we'll take a look at that base level.
Yeah, and if you want to send me some soil tests, I'd be more than happy to look at that. Hey, Kevin, we got to run, but thanks for the call. Really appreciate it. Best of luck to you.
Yeah, thank you. Y'all have a good day and a good harvest.
You bet. You too. All right, we will be right back with the Ag PhD mailbag after this.
Avoid the V-shaped pattern of injury caused by chemical buildup in your booms. The Express End Cap from HiPro eliminates the dead ends that lead to herbicide buildup and provides easy access to your booms, giving a complete flush between applications. HiPro, helping you spray better.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? The Soil Warrior can reduce trips across the field, optimize nutrient placement, and improve soil health. So you can lower production costs without losing yield. See what makes the Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
This is Dave Robbins reporting from what can only be described as a cornfield under attack. With me is Jim Stafford, a local corn grower. Jim, what's happening here?
Mites, banks, two-spotted and carmine, you name it. This corn is under attack.
What are the plans, if any, to deal with this serious situation?
Well, we're not going to stand for it. We're going to fight the mite.
How?
ZLSC miticide. Just one application by Grounder Air gives long-lasting mite control. Now that field corn, popcorn, corn for seed, and corn grown for silage are all labeled, mites don't stand a chance.
But what about their eggs?
ZLSC affects mites in all stages, even eggs.
What kind of timetable are we talking about?
ZLSC reaches mites under the leaf where they feed and hide with translaminar activity. For long-lasting protection after a single application, apply ZLSC at early threshold or as a preventative treatment.
ZLSC. It lasts so mites can't. Contact your local Valent representative or Valent authorized retailer for more information. Always read and follow label instructions.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy Two Save Three are trademarks owned by AmVac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
With Preaxor Xemium brand fungicide in your soybeans, it's hard to know which comes first, disease control or plant health. Preaxor fungicide is proven to deliver both with consistent performance, so your soybean crops get plant health benefits like growth efficiency and stress tolerance, plus longer-lasting disease protection, all contributing to maximum yield potential. Grow smart with BASF and Preaxor fungicide. Talk to your retailer today. BASF, we create chemistry. Always read and follow label directions.
Hey everybody, come on in. The Ag PhD mailbag is about to begin.
All right, first thing I've got in the mailbag today, we got a couple of letters together in one envelope from Brandon and Brian. who just talked about the Ag PhD Field Day. And to summarize here, basically their last few lines was this. They said the event was top-notch, the Ag PhD Field Day I'm talking about. It was extremely impressive and well-run. Please let everyone at Ag PhD know that we appreciate all their efforts in putting on a perfect event. Hey, thanks, guys. We really appreciate that. As you can imagine, it's a lot of work for our people here, and then we have a whole bunch of volunteers that help us out that day. I probably have, I'm going to say, 160 people all together that are working for us, with us that particular day, just to show you some of the things we're doing on our farm. It's a super fun event. We have about 10,000 people. This is the third year in a row we've had around 10,000 people come from all over the country and really around the world. I think we had 18 different countries even represented this year. Anyway, thanks again, guys. All right, next one is from Murray in Ontario, Canada. He says, hey, Brian and Darren, I have a concern with Ingenia herbicide. In the last 2 weeks, I've seen significant injury to my Roundup Ready soybeans. Okay, so I have read Murray's email, and here is the line that concerns me. Okay, so listen closely to this. He said, these beans were planted May 28th, approximately 2 weeks later. I sprayed the weeds in the fence row and along the roadside ditch with Ingenia herbicide. Now, Ingenia is dicamba. I sprayed about 15 feet along the edge of the field at a rate of a half liter per acre, so that'd be roughly 16 ounces for those of us here in the U.S. I sprayed a half liter per acre with 50 gallons of water per acre with an extremely coarse spray droplet. Approximately 2 weeks ago, we started seeing your typical dicamba injury. The injury was noticeable across the field for about 40 to 60 rods. Have you seen this before? And do you have any ideas as to why this happened? Yes, Murray. Right on the Ingenia label, it's going to tell you what you have to do for a buffer, basically. And our assumption is the wind was just blowing toward your soybean field, and that's why they got injured. So there just wasn't a proper buffer there. My other concern for you, just in terms of spraying the Ingenia and having it work, any herbicide and having it work, is you said it's sprayed with 50 gallons of water per acre. Normally, we're spraying 10 to 20 gallons of water per acre. So typically, when we're using contact herbicides or herbicides that have to get into the plant through the leaves, we want to cut that water volume down so you have a more concentrated droplet. So that's on a completely separate note in terms of the control side. But yes, Ingenia is dicamba. You don't want to be near sensitive crops. You want the wind blowing the other direction. You want to have a pretty good buffer, and then you won't see that. Now, the only good thing I can say to you is you sprayed a long time ago, and you finally saw injury a couple weeks ago. So that tells me that there wasn't a lot of dicamba that ended up getting on these plants. So even though they're cupped, you may not see a whole lot of yield damage, if any. All right, next email is from Faye. She says, can you talk more about how plants affect people and animals? I hand weed my yard, and I haven't seen sagebrush, like you guys were talking about as your weed of the week the other day. I haven't seen sagebrush, but I think it's pretty. So why should I pull it out? Okay, so first of all, Faye, as a landowner in the United States, you have the right to do just about anything you want with your land. Not anything, but you can certainly put a number of different plants out there. If you like sagebrush, there's no reason why you can't plant sagebrush. What we talk about all the time here at Ag PhD is we want to be able to produce plants, and then we also have to be able to control plants when they are in areas where they are not supposed to be or where we don't want them to be. For example, corn is the number one crop we talk about here on Ag PhD. Unfortunately, it's also the number one weed in terms of yield loss per individual weed in a soybean crop. So I have to know how to produce it. I also have to know how to control it. The last thing Faye had in here, I got a charge out of this. She goes, y'all should work on your chemistry. It sounds like bickering sometimes. Look, Faye, we're just having fun. Darren and I are actual brothers. We get along tremendously well. We're just having fun. You're just seeing the entertainment side of things. Darren and I work together every day. He's a fantastic guy. I just will give him a hard time sometimes. Just all part of the show. All right, next one. We have a whole bunch of videos out there on drain tile, and the question that came in, this is off of YouTube, where does all that water go with tile? Well, where the water's typically going, and it depends. Sometimes it just goes into wetlands and might sit there for a while. But, I mean, if there's excess water around, it's going one of two places. Either it's going to evaporate up in the air, or it's going to end up in some river and flow downhill and, you know, continue to meet up with other rivers. And a lot of times it might end up in the Gulf of Mexico, for example, or up in Lake Winnipeg. I don't know. So it all depends on what tile we're talking about. But one of the things we talk about all the time with tile is that water's moving whether we're going to do a whole lot about it or not. So even if you say, oh, that water wasn't going anywhere without tile, come on now. If the water table goes up, there's water moving below ground somewhere. It's seeping down below ground, and it's going to lower ground all the time. So if we tile and we move it somewhere we want it to go, then a lot of times that does mean that it is not somewhere we don't want it to go. All right, next one is from Eric. He was watching one of the videos we had on YouTube about grass clippings in the lawn. And he said, hey guys, great information. It's kind of an interesting note about the grass clippings analysis. I can't remember who I was talking to about this just a couple, 3 days ago about the nutrients that are in those grass clippings. If you leave those on your lawn, that means that you're going to have more nutrients available for free for your lawn in the future. And very often, we don't really think about that. Even for me, growing up on the farm, I really liked the look of our lawn when I bagged up the grass clippings. And quite honestly, I just threw them in the dump because I thought, well, you know, who cares? I like the look of it. The problem with that is now you're going to have to replace that fertility that you removed, plus the fact that to some degree, not a lot of it, but a tiny little bit of that could become organic matter in your soil. So it's good over time for many reasons. You might not like the look of it. You might say, oh, there's too much there, which means you probably just need to clip that more often. But anyway, yes, it is really important having those nutrients go back into the soil. All right, last couple emails that I'll get to today. One here is from Eli and the other's from Edelson. They're both kind of related, so I'll read Edelson's first. He says, hi, my name is Edelson. I'm writing you this email to request for advice on how to grow soybeans using the standard I saw on your YouTube channel. I hope to hear from you soon. And from Eli, it says, I've been watching your YouTube channel. I learned a lot specifically about corn farming, and I'm planning to start corn farming in a couple months in Europe. Now, I'm not very familiar with what a corn farming contract should contain to ensure the quality of my product. Do you have a contract sample I can learn from? I have a guy who will be in charge of that farm, and I want to make sure he delivers a high-quality product. Okay, so in both cases, we're really talking about a lot of very basic farming information, and let's put it this way. There's a lot to corn farming. There's a lot to soybean farming. And that's why we continue to post all our videos on YouTube. We've been doing our television show for over 20 years now. It's why we do the radio show here every day. There's a lot to learn. And even for me, I've been on the farm just about my whole life. And I'm still learning every day. There are a lot of things I don't know yet on how to grow soybeans or what I need to do to corn. Now, to answer Eli's question specifically on the corn farming contract or a corn contract, it's with corn, it's a little different than with a lot of the specialty crops, at least here in the U.S. I don't have a certain contract to raise number two yellow corn. I just produce it, and then I go sell it a lot of times to an ethanol plant. What you could do is you can contact some of the different grain elevators, ethanol plants, those types of things, and they'll talk to you about the quality that they're looking for. But the number one thing, whenever we start talking about quality, like Eli's talking about on corn, or we start talking about just how to grow soybeans that Edelson had for a question, a lot of that comes back to fertility. We talk about drainage first. You got to manage that water. But then the next thing is you really need to do a great job in terms of the fertility side of things. And there's so much more than just N, P, and K. There's sulfur. There's managing that soil pH. There are micronutrients. There's getting the microbials going in the soil. There's just a tremendous amount you can do if you want to not only raise a great crop, but have a healthy soil along the way too. All right, well, before we go, I just want to say thanks to our production staff. Thanks to everybody who called or wrote in today with questions. We really appreciate that here on a Farmer Friday. And thanks to you for listening. And be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.